It snowed. Here, it snowed.
Like outside?
No, 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 in my shower. Yeah, it snowed. Like outside. Snow, snow.
Like fell from the sky.
Yeah.
Like the powdery white stuff that's cold.
Yeah, all right. I can't think of a famous weatherman from BCTV offhand. I was going to say Mike McArdle, but that's not right.
Yeah, I can't remember the guy's name either.
I met the guy more than once. I met him twice. I worked there and then met him at the Blue Rodeo concert. I'm not joking. Mark Madriga.
Yeah, that's his name, yeah. Reigning with a chance of Blue Rodeo.
That's right. That's exactly how it raining with a chance of Jim Cuddy. So this one goes out to Mark Madriga. Hello and welcome to episode 329 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany. With me, as always, is
Adam in Vancouver.
In Vancouver. I know we start with the weather all the time, but Adam, it legitimately snowed here.
It's legitimately sunny here. So
heartbreaking because, like, last week I had to put the screen door on for the bugs because the bugs were here.
Okay.
It was so hot, we couldn't just sit in the sun. We had to put the umbrella up. Like, it was crazy. The kids were wearing sunscreen. Life was good.
Yep.
And then legit 0 degrees and snow the next day.
I don't feel bad for you.
Oh, thank you. That's wonderful.
Yeah, you're very happy and braggy when you were talking about how nice the weather was there when that... Yeah, I felt like...
I feel like there was empathy. No. There was empathy.
I don't think so.
For you, yeah. No, I know what it's like. I've lived there, man. I know.
Okay.
I know. And anyways, full empathy on my part.
None on mine.
No sympathy.
Right.
That's a fine line.
Yeah, no, I'm not sympathetic, nor am I empathetic for your plight.
Right. Now, if it was just a couple of days, but now it's back now, like it warmed up, except for like we had a couple, you know, baseball practices this week because opening day is tomorrow and we were trying to get, you know, to fine tune a few things, maybe some cutoffs, stuff like that.
Right.
Maybe the guys cutting off to third aren't fine tuned. We're working on that, but it was tough in the snow. So it's warmed up. Hopefully it's going to be great weather tomorrow for the opener. We're opening at home. Very excited. Going to be a big season.
Oh, well, I'm very happy to hear that.
Yeah, you're not. No empathy at all for that either.
No.
Do we even know each other?
A little bit.
Yeah. So, and lastly, we'll just completely get me off the table.
Germany update. Yeah, the Germany update.
The Germany update. If you do need to get snow screen.
Yeah.
Amazon. Do it on Amazon.
Maybe a shovel.
Yeah.
Maybe
if a shovel that could double as an umbrella for the sun.
Or you could use it as a bounce for your photography. What about a balaclava?
Like if you're going to rob a liquor store?
Yeah.
Like that's the only use for them. Have you ever worn one like to ski? Like a legit balaclava? Not just some funky racing thing?
No.
That's all they're for.
Okay.
Don't do it. Don't buy a balaclava on our Amazon. But if you do buy something on Amazon, click your site. It helps us out. And people are doing it. And you know what the cool thing is? And this is, I think I've mentioned this before. I'm going to re-mention this.
Okay.
It's not just, like, people will email us and say, hey, I just bought this big ticket item, like a big, you know, camera or lens or something. And that's fantastic. Even as cool as that is people buying... just the little, you know, things that cost a couple of dollars. Now, obviously, our take is much lower, but the mere fact that on something that small, they're taking the time to click through our site and help us out, it really means a lot to me and maybe Adam.
Okay.
So, thanks for taking the time. Keep doing it.
Thank you.
And so lastly, I just had we were recording an hour late today. Thank you for accommodating. But I had a meeting with potential clients for some wedding photos.
Oh, wow. You're back in the wedding game.
No, I don't. But if people ask, then I do.
Okay.
But and also if they're willing to pay. So that's also part of it. Anyway, so I met with them and you know. And here's the thing is, ich kann Deutsch verstehen. I can understand German.
Yeah.
Ich kann natürlich auch Deutsch sprechen. I can also speak German.
Okay.
But when it comes to photography and talking about the business of how I will photograph your wedding day and stuff, when it comes to all that creative stuff, I can't do both. I can't do it in German.
Okay.
I don't know why. It's just, is it because I'm using a different part of my brain, left side, right side? I don't know. It is a mystery to me. And when I have people come over, you know, Germans come over for, you know, portraits or whatever it is, I try to speak in German to them and, you know, turn this way, turn that way and whatnot. It is really, I get so slow. Because I'm trying to be creative on the one hand and then speak the language. So I don't know. Is it a different side of the brain? I would like someone to explain the brain to us.
Okay. Well, that coming soon.
But the takeaway is, and this is what I would suggest to anybody listening, I've always put a great deal of value on my kids being bilingual.
Okay.
Both my kids speak very good. Like they actually speak very good English and very good German. I haven't, you know, measured them at the levels, but just based on, you know, with the other kids, they get along great.
Okay.
And I think that is very important. And to what I'm saying is, if I can't speak German and photograph, if you can speak multiple languages, I'm surmising that it would then activate a different part of your brain that you would not normally use just by speaking multiple languages. It would therefore translate into something else good that you're good at, like hula hooping or something.
Sure. That's pretty deep.
That's the moneymaker, the hula hooping.
Right.
So once again, if anyone's a...
brainologist?
Yeah, I was going to say brain doctor, but you're probably right. I think it's a brainologist. Let us know why I can't do both. Why I can't chew gum and whatever the rest of that sentence is.
Talk.
not the real one. Okay. LBJ. All right. What's going on with you, Adam?
Just got back from Vernon.
So nothing then.
Yeah.
Did you get snow on the Coke?
No. There was lots of snow up there. No actual snow on the road, but lots of transporting yourself back about 3 months, and there's parts of the Coquihalla where it's a complete winter wonderland. Again, the roads are clear, but you would feel like it's the middle of December. The trees are all covered in snow. It's that's just within 3 feet of the road. There's snowbanks that are 4 or 5 feet high. Still,
and that's
but that's
crazy.
Up at the peak near Merritt, where your elevation is pretty high. Your ears pop when you come back down, but. It's pretty neat. I mean, especially when the roads are clear like that. Like, it's pretty picturesque. Now, I don't stop. I don't bother to stop and take photos because I'm not really a nature or landscape photographer. That's just not my wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. But I truly, you know, admire the beauty of it all. It's beautiful up there.
I haven't made that drive in a long time. Probably since your brother-in-law got married.
Okay.
That's probably the last time I made that drive, unfortunately. No, that can't be. That's not true. That's a lie. But close to then. Anyway, that's a drive I miss, which is something that you probably take for granted.
I don't like it. Yeah.
No, but for me, like, it's actually, assuming your kids are just sleeping the whole time.
Yeah, they're fine. They're good travelers.
Yeah, so if it's that's the situation, I miss that drive because it's not a ton of traffic once you get past, you know, Hope.
Yeah.
Even before then, Chilliwack, really.
Sure.
It opens up, and then you're just driving in some beautiful, beautiful territory with nobody around. It's kind of the dream. You don't get that here on the Autobahn, unfortunately. So there's that.
Yeah. So we did all the family stuff that you could imagine. I will at some point, I haven't edited the photos because we came back Sunday evening. I've worked pretty much all the time up until now. So I will eventually get through editing some of the photos and then I'll pop a few on Instagram for people.
And we shall talk about them then, because again, besides the drive up there, I also love that part of the world, that whole, the interior of BC.
Yeah.
Again, something I took for granted. Like, we'd go up there for baseball when I was like 19 or something like that. And, you know, we'd play baseball and trash hotel rooms. That's what, that was our thing.
Sure.
We did not appreciate the nature. And I would now. So now that it's gone.
It's very, very, very sad, yeah.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. Anyways, also, I don't want to mention about the feedback from last week's episode. We got a few people talking about their thoughts on the temporal shift, the time cop part of it. So we appreciate that. We appreciate hearing your side of it. So if anybody else wants to fire off, it's definitely not a closed topic. So we look forward to hearing from you.
It is, super geeky, but not closed. That's
for it sure. is geeky, but I, yeah. I think it struck a note with a number of people.
All so, nerds.
I am one of them. Yeah, I am definitely one of them. I'm probably the coolest of the nerds, though. So
yeah.
Did you shoot any? Okay, you shot Vernon. I'm guessing.
Yeah. So I shot some photos. Yeah. So I think interesting to me, mostly just, you know, kids around the place. It was just the Easter, so there was a little Easter egg hunt and the kids outside playing. And, you know, we'll dig into my photo challenge in a bit. But, yeah, interesting to me. I'm not sure interesting to everyone else. But
it is interesting. And, again, look, let's talk about the pictures a little more when you actually have some to post. But
sure.
There's one thing in particular that I love about being up there, and I haven't spent a lot of time taking photos up there, but one thing that would excite me in terms of shooting pictures of my kids, what angle, what aspect would you say that would be? Like, what is it for you that you find?
That I like that you out there?
Get? Yeah.
Well, you get all the trees and the grass and the, like, wide open spaces, right?
Bam. Wide open spaces is exactly what I was looking for. That's what does it for me up there. It's just amazing. Like, everywhere, like, there's really no, hardly any bad backgrounds.
Yeah, and there's mountains. I mean, yeah, there's just a plethora of kind of cool backgrounds and very different. It's country versus city, right? So,
mm-hmm.
Yep.
I mean, downtown Vernon, that's a whole different story.
Yeah, that's different. But out where they are, this is very much in the country. There is not a lot of people around. Everyone has a tractor. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So that's what I appreciate. I decided something was interesting.
Okay.
Shot the cover for our Game Day magazine. We're calling it a magazine. It's probably a flyer. Let's be honest.
Okay.
But I'm treating it like a magazine.
Right. You take this seriously.
I do, because anyways.
Just yes.
Just yes. Yes, and the end. So I posted it on our site already, Facebook or whatever it is, but here it is again, and I said I'd talk a little bit about how I shot it.
So I'm looking at three different photos. I'm guessing you kind of did it in pieces.
Well, hold on. Before we get to hang on. Look at the one that has the actual magazine cover with the title and everything.
Yeah, so that's the finished product.
That's Spieltag, means game day.
Yeah.
So we'll have this out ready to go tomorrow. So the genesis of this is that, you know, we want to kind of have fun with the cover every week. And we got new uniforms this year. And so we haven't unveiled them yet. This is the sort of the sneak preview of our new uniforms.
Okay.
As you can see, he's got, that's Luca. He has our previous white home uniforms. We've been wearing the sleeveless for some reason.
Okay.
Now this happened before I got to the team. I never would have allowed sleeveless to happen, 'cause they're terrible. But finally we said enough this year. No more with the sleeveless. They look silly. Out they go.
Gotcha.
And so we wanted to brand the German aspect, and so rather than have the Hawks, this is our new away uniforms. They say Tübingen, as do most away uniforms, have the name of the city on them. And here they are. So we wanted to showcase, here he is ripping off the old jersey, showing off the new one, right?
Gotcha.
So I said, yeah, come on over. We're gonna do this originally I had it in my mind we're going to do it on the field. You know, that would look cool. But I'm not even joking, it snowed, and that didn't really fit in with the theme of baseball.
Right.
So I said, let's get in the studio and get going. And so I put it out there. I said, hey, how did I shoot this? So just by looking at this, what do you think is going on here?
Just looking at the cover.
Just looking at the cover, yeah.
It looks like you shot in a dark environment with mm-hmm. backlighting and a smoke machine.
Correct.
Looks like maybe just one light on the subject and maybe one or two lighting the smoke and kind of creating a backlight on his hair mm-hmm. and the end.
You're close.
Is this the maroon background, right? Like your wall downstairs or whatever is actually the background, but you've just dropped the ambience so far down that you can't see it?
Okay, I'll take you through how we shot it first. Is there's three lights. There's one flash, one hard light directly behind, like basically firing right into his back.
Mm-hmm. That's where all the hair lights up there.
Yeah, so if you look at the maroon background one, that's what's happening there. So I basically I'm getting set up. I'm just getting the lighting dialed in before we introduce the fog, which I know I'm using the fog. This wasn't an afterthought. It was all about the fog.
Okay.
And so I got it all set up, and so through a full power CTB gel on the backlight.
Yeah.
So you can see that going into his hair and his arm hair and everything like that. That's all blue. Going blue.
Yep.
Correct. So I've white balanced for daylight.
Okay.
So that is going to come in even bluer because the flash is already at daylight. Now you're adding blue. You're making it even bluer.
Okay.
Now on the camera right is the key light, and that is a flash in a softbox, our big softbox that we have.
Right.
On that, I added a quarter CTO.
Right.
Just to warm it up a little bit.
Yep.
And then, you don't see it in the maroon shot. I added a third light later after I noticed that there wasn't enough fill, and that's just a simple umbrella on the camera left and a little bit low to get up under the hat, and that's probably at two stops down from the key.
Okay.
Which would make it, for the people keeping track at home, that's about a 4-to-1 lighting ratio, but that's just enough to just to fill in the right side of his, like where his ear is and stuff, and it's very subtle, but you can see it in the final. Mm-hmm. You can see the difference. So once I get that dialed in, then I add the smoke. Because I don't want, even though the maroon background kind of matches the shirt, it's not what we're going for in this photo. We want the shirt to pop out. That was very important to me, that I wanted the new jersey to stick out.
Right.
So started adding the fog. And so there's a middle picture of there you can see of where I start to add the fog. And here it's just not dissipating enough. So all I'm doing is I'm basically spraying the fog in behind Luca.
Mm-hmm.
And so I photograph it. Well, I think there's just too much smoke or fog definition here. And it kind of becomes the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And distracts. And so basically what I did was waited a little bit until the fog dissipated, until we get the final image that we have, so that it's there, it looks cool, there's some texture to it, but it's not overwhelming.
Right.
Meanwhile, a little bit of that fog has crept around in front of him and sort of diffused the image a little bit, which I happen to like.
Okay.
And so that's how we got there.
Nice. I like it.
Thanks. And so Joe, he was the closest. He'd guessed that I put a full CTO on the key light.
Right.
And then balanced for...
tungsten.
For tungsten, yeah. Yeah. Which you could achieve, basically achieve the same thing.
Yeah.
But I just, my way, this has happened to be the way I did it.
Sure. Oh, looks good. Yeah, I don't know if I like the final image. I think if you had put all the text and everything on the middle image, I'd probably like that as well. So I think it's a season to taste issue. I kind of like the sort of gradient with the black and the jersey's a little bit sharper in the second one. I see what you're saying as far as, again, it becomes a little bit more about the smoke. The only difference to me with the second and the third that I kind of like the middle image is just the jersey so much sharper.
Also keep in mind, yeah, you're looking at two different resolutions. I'm posting the full resolution of the magazine, which once you look at it on your screen is going to be inherently a little bit soft.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And then I'm posting a smaller version of the middle picture, which I have actually added a little bit of sharpness to.
Okay. All right.
So it's not apples to it's not apples to apples. So
it's a good image either way. How come he's still wearing whatever thing is on his wrist?
It's a good question. He just got back from Australia, and I think he's proud of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I missed that. I was paying attention to everything else. And so I think he's proud of his Australia wristband and his brand new beard. And okay, so fair he's enough. 19. So I mean, in all fairness, yeah, good for the 19-year-old kid to get a beard like that.
Yeah,
good for him. I could grow a beard like that when I was 19, but just in parts.
Yeah, streaky.
Yeah, not all over the place.
Yeah.
Most of it on my back. So good for him.
All right. Good.
Anyway,
good lighting situation that you set up there. I like it, and it's relatively straightforward. I think again, where I think you know some people might have trouble is with the gels and figuring out again to get the right kind of color tones in the skin, and then still create the blue background. So that's good. That's good tip as far as the you know how you did it. So thank you.
Well, my pleasure. I think the big takeaway here is that this, aside from the titles which were added later, this is all done in camera.
Yeah.
So I don't think I would really want to do this in layers and add a background and do all that kind of stuff. That would be a lot of work, especially with this guy's hair. Like having to cut out his hair would be impossible.
Yeah.
So there you go. In camera. All right. Photo challenge for this week was Easter.
Right.
Wow. Good luck shooting Easter.
Why?
With kids. Oh, how do you shoot? Like, because in my head, my kids are wildly excited about Easter.
Okay.
They love it. Now, because of, you know, we have other family coming over, and the days they couldn't come over on Easter, they were going to different family, you know, the whole family dance that gets done. So they wanted to bring, you know, they wanted to bring some stuff for the kids to find on Good Friday. So right. We had to have a little mini Easter egg hunt, you know, on Good Friday, like a, just to get ready for Sunday. And then, of course, we had the Easter egg hunt on Sunday, and that wasn't, the kids loved it so much that the rest of the day they just kept, as I think I did too, they kept hiding their eggs on each other and then finding them. And then like this up until yesterday, my wife finally put her foot down and said, okay, enough. That was on, so that's Thursday. Yesterday was Thursday. We're finding eggs, like little chocolate eggs all over the house, smushed up, and it's a mess.
Yeah.
But they love it. But the point is so in my head, I want to capture the excitement photographically.
Right.
Of their Easter egg hunt, of them looking for stuff, and we do it in the backyard.
Okay.
Good luck. They're just running around all over the place, erratic, and when they see something, there's no way you can anticipate where they're going to go. So in terms of the Easter egg hunt, I'm 0 for 28 on the hunt.
I did the same thing, and I realized pretty early in the Easter egg hunt, like they did it all over sort of the yard and farm area that my in-laws have up in Vernon. So it's all outside, which is good because a little easier as far as the getting enough light, right? Because they're moving around pretty quickly. So what I did after I realized there's no way I'm going to get anything because everyone's darting in different directions is I just looked for a spot that I liked where I could see an egg And I just waited. Which kid was going to come and find that egg? And I knew they were going to have to reach up because it was going to be slightly out of their reach. And that's what I did. So I only got 2 or 3 photos from the hunt because I had to wait for someone to come to this barn spot that I was parked near to try to get the egg. But I got exactly the photo that I thought I would get of my niece with her tongue, you know, out of her mouth in full concentration, trying to reach up to get this pink egg that was sitting on the side of the barn. So that was, it was kind of like the focus trap. It was the picture trap, because that was the only way, but that limited me to 2 shots, her just seeing it and her reaching up to get it.
But that's worth it. And I even tried that. I really, going in, I knew full well that I had to pick a spot, but even that wasn't going to happen with the way it worked out with the kids. Our backyard is more of a European backyard versus a giant wide open middle of nowhere BC backyard.
Right.
So that did play into it. But so really, really hard. That was my plan for the Easter photo.
I also used this same technique for hide and seek outside at my in-law's place. So I basically sat in a spot where my son and his cousin were hiding, and I waited for my nephew, and he was kind of had a little trail of adults with him and his mom and my wife, and they're kind of coming around the corner. And so the kids were hiding behind a stair, and I wanted to see the hide and seek, like that moment where, you know, the kids pop up and I found you, and I just waited for it to happen. Then I took that shot, which I got. And it's very candid, like it's just like, you know, I'm kind of out of the way and no one's paying attention to me. But the only way to get that is patience. And you might not get it at all. It might not happen, but that's the way you get it.
So essentially what you've done here is you've stepped up to the first tee, just driven it right down the chute 300 yards out, and then just turn and walk to the car.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. Hey, obviously the guy's a pro.
Yep.
Yeah, longest drive of the day.
Yeah, now you can be the judge of. I'll post those photos because they are the moment as I describe it. And I mean, again, you can probably nitpick photographically at everything, but the photo is what you hope to get in that sort of snapshot moment of something happening that doesn't look rehearsed.
If you were to look at my 28 failures, you'll know that I am not going to nitpick. I'm going to hire you to come out and shoot Easter next year. Or better yet, we'll all come out to Vernon next year. We'll do Easter.
Yeah, we'll need 15 photographers to get this right. Because like I say, I had 4 kids that I was hoping to get 1 or 2 pictures of each, and I got 1 kid, 2 shots. And then I just gave up. I was like, forget it. That's it. I looked at the LCD and said, yep, that's it.
I got her. Hey, where's the chocolate?
And I thought initially that was going to be my photo challenge, but then I decided to use a different one.
So. Let's look at the one you did use. And why did you not go with that one?
I didn't go with that one because I thought that was kind of what was expected as the photo. I went a different direction because when we say Easter, the kid finding the Easter egg, it seems too cliche for me. So my in-laws especially asked me as a special favor to take a family photo of the grandchildren with them. So they didn't, they wanted just one of, you know, themselves with the 4 grandchildren. And I said, sure. Yeah, no problem. I'll do that. And it was unfortunately middle of the day. And this is kind of the part of the day where they're all playing and outside and having fun. And so it seemed as good a time as any. They were all up for doing it. So in a perfect world, I'd wait till 6:30 or 7 o'clock and get the best light. But most of the time, they're not even going to still be there. They're going to go home and they have their own things that they need to do. So they're there for the bulk of the middle of the day from whatever 11 o'clock until 4 o'clock. That's my kind of window. And then I also got to think when they're all happy and agreeable. So that's probably the biggest factor. So this is about the photo I decided to take was about 2 in the afternoon. So the sun is pretty much right overhead, slightly in behind them. And I just looked for, because I knew that I couldn't really shoot with sky in the background because it would just be completely blown out. I didn't want that. And so then I started looking around for, you know, where was the background that was going to make the most sense. And I'd never taken a family photo. They have this sort of old, I don't know when it's from, ancient looking tractor that sits out in their front sort of area next to their driveway. And I thought, oh, that's a good setup for a family photo. So I looked at, okay, well, what's the background going to be? All right, it's mostly, you know, trees and hills and barns. And so there's no real sky. So that'll work. I can expose for their faces and that background won't completely blow out, right? And I thought I can tinker and post with the greens a little bit so that I can bring back some of the highlights and whatnot. So I decided that was my spot. And the sun and the angle I knew was going to be slightly up on their heads and a little bit in behind them. So I thought, okay, I can expose for the faces and get a good image. It's going to be a little washed out, but I'm fine with that. And nobody has to stare into the sun. So I don't need any flash or any of those extra variables, which is always hard when you're dealing with four children that are going to give you 2.5 minutes of their time. So sat them in place and fired off a few shots and that was it, you know, probably spent 3 or 4 minutes all in.
Well, and that's what's, I mean, considering the circumstances, I mean, at magic hour, this would have been, you know,
oh, it'd be better. Yeah.
Well, you'd be shooting the other direction, first of all.
And the other direction isn't as good. That's the problem. If I wanted to shoot this object with them on it, I shot and I'll post one of the images of my daughter at magic hour, like jumping off that thing, shooting in the other direction. The background's just not as pleasing. It's not what I wanted. And there's more clutter in the background. So yes, you get better light, but then you don't get the same background for all intents purposes of what they want. This would be a better photo than shooting in better light in the other direction.
Or hey,
getting
everyone
up at the crack of dawn.
5 a.m.
Yeah. So that was never going to happen. So
5 a.m. call time.
Yeah. I think that they will love this and post this print this and put this on their wall. So yeah. that was the objective. Yeah.
Also, it is. I mean, I've been to their house multiple times. This is a, you know, iconic. That's a bit much, but this is a very big part of their yard. It's been there for as long as I've known them.
Oh, yeah.
Which is 25 years now.
Yeah.
Since the first time I've been there, and that's always been there. I have photographed this. I sent you some photographs I took on film.
Yeah.
When we were up there for Easter 1 year. I've been there for Easter, pre-kids. That's really nice when you can tie that in. That'll mean a lot to them.
Yeah, and the other part of this, and I think I did a pretty good job of balancing it out, is this is on a slope. Like, this is not a flat image. That is not, like, that little tractor is not level. Like, the whole ground is sloping. Like, my son would be on the high end and my nephew on the low end. And so there's a pretty good slope, and same with the whole background. So I tried to correct for it, but not too much that the barns and everything else looks crooked. So I tried to find somewhat of a happy medium, and I like this image because I think you can't tell. You kind of, it's out of the way. No. Like, you sort of forget about, you know, the fact that none of this is level.
Well, I noticed it's slightly off level and the, chromatic aberration when it's not level. You obviously, there's a lot of different angles going on that they all work, though. I think it's great. I mean, we have the old lawnmower on the left side, looks like to me.
Yeah,
and, you know, that's tilted, and you got like a lot of, no, that's good. It's good that it's all going on. There's nothing egregious. All in all, you know, great photo. I think that's. I think they're gonna love it.
Yeah, I'm happy with how it turned out. Like you say, you can nitpick at some of the details, but I like it. Yeah,
I'm not gonna.
Okay.
So there's that. All right. So here's my photo. I had a difficult time, like I said, like scrambling for an Easter photo. So it wasn't like I thought it was too cliche. As I mentioned, I failed at the, hey, where's my eggs photo. So I decided to set one up and show off what my son got from the Easter Bunny.
Okay.
And this is a little, this is 10% of what he got from the Easter Bunny, because of course he's spoiled. But he did get the big egg and he got a remote control car that drives either way, flips upside down and can still drive.
Right. I've seen these on commercials. Yeah.
Yeah, they're crazy hard to drive actually, because there's no steering. It doesn't, like, this, all you do is, like, you basically control each side of the car with a different accelerator.
Right.
And so that's how you turn, by accelerating more on the right side. He actually at 3 he's figured it out. I can't do it. but he rips around on it. And it's from what I understand, pretty much indestructible, and also does not – the big soft rubber wheels do not damage our walls.
Awesome.
So there's that. So there's a whole lot going on there, but he loves cars and specifically remote control cars. Just can't get enough. This is the third one because I kind of thought, before I was like, hey, he's two. Like back when before he even turned three, I bought him one because he really wanted one. And I thought, I'll get him the one for his $10. Like how can you go wrong for $10? And that was a great 3.5 days. And then it's broken.
Yeah.
I said, all right, well, okay. And then I got him a little better one at the flea market, like brand new, but and that was 4.5 days, and he broke it. And not his fault. It was his cheap dad.
Yeah.
And so I broke the bank on this one. I was like, all right, I'll get him a good one at $25.
Right.
But it looks so far indestructible.
Okay.
And he loves it. So that's why I wanted to photograph him with it. The bunny, and then him in the background.
Now, I don't know if it's my eyes or not, but it seems like the tire is in focus in part and out of focus in part, but then yet he's sharp in focus, the bunny's in focus. I feel like I'm missing something.
Yeah, it's not your eye. That's exactly what's going on here.
How is he in focus?
Well, there's some trickery going on.
Okay.
I mean, and this is two images put together.
Okay, I figured my brain was otherwise. Something's wrong with my eyes.
No, but yeah. You can see you can kind of see in between him and the car goes out of focus as well.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've done here is I basically locked the camera down, sat him in the background, focused on the rabbit. The focus is on the eye of the rabbit.
Okay.
Which puts the bulk of the car in focus, not the front tire, but, that's where the plane is. Snap a shot, quickly refocus onto him, and snap a shot, and then combine the two in post to basically trick you into having a deep focus shot that's not quite a deep focus shot.
Okay.
It's kind of my Citizen Kane.
Gotcha.
What
would have been wrong with just having a deeper focus?
It would have taken it would have been about a 2 out of 10, and this is a 2.5. So no, I just kind of wanted to do something different. Deep focus. I don't think I would have got it. I wouldn't have got the bunny and him this sharp.
Okay.
I could have got him closer, but I kind of wanted him playing with the car, that sort of thing.
Gotcha.
Again, this with a 3-year-old, this is tough to execute. I mean, I a little bit more messing around. If I had another 5-10 minutes, I could have fine-tuned it, but I went so far as to this is lit with the flash on the camera bouncing into the ceiling.
Yeah.
Now that's on manual. I wanted to be consistent between the two images, and if I went ETTL and focus on the rabbit for one, and then on him for the second, the ETTL would have likely added more light
right
onto him. And so that would have been hard to deal with. So all in all, in post, this was very, very easy to combine. Basically just kind of essentially cutting out around the rabbit and the car, like just a quick cursory cut, and then a little bit of cloning to cover that. Because once it's out of focus in the front, like the rabbit and the car in the out-of-focus version, when we're focusing on him, the images, the objects get a little bit larger because it blurs into the background.
Right.
So you then have to kind of clone that out a little bit just to make sure that the in-focus car covers the out-of-focus car.
Right.
So other than that, not going on the wall. I mean, your in-laws will probably put it on the wall next to your Easter photo. They're big fans.
Right.
Okay. But this is a technique that you wouldn't do here. I just wanted to sort more of a proof of concept. And I've worked on movies before where they've used this. Like, they do it in camera with something called a split-field diopter, which is basically it's like a wind-on or a square filter, which is like basically changes the focus of your image. So you'd focus on on your subject, in this case my son,
mm-hmm.
And you'd have a thing covering a filter covering part of the lens, which would then refocus that part of the lens on the rabbit. Mm. Now, it wouldn't work that it wouldn't work for the car, though. The car would then be out of focus. And so this is a thing that they used to do in the movies a lot more, like a movie called All the President's Men. All the President's Men? Yeah. Have you ever seen that one?
No.
Highly recommend it. I think I probably told you a couple years ago to check it out. I'll re-recommend that with Robert Redford, Dustin Hoffman. There's a bunch of shots in the newspaper office that they've done this deep focus trick. So you can kind of see in between, stuff goes out of focus, and then in the background, it's back in focus. So is that, and you can do that, or you can achieve it with tilt shift is a way to sort of play with the focal plane. Or just mess around in Photoshop.
Sure.
So there's that. All right. On to the topic.
Which is?
A listener question from, he posted it on Facebook, so I'm assuming he's okay with us saying his name.
Okay.
Brian Psycho. I was told to pronounce it Psycho. He looks like it should be Keiko, but he says it's Psycho.
Okay.
So his question is, it was in reference to your challenge photo from last week with you took with the colors with your daughter and her two friends.
Yeah.
With the carrots and that.
The bunny
photo.
Sure.
So his comment was, I have trouble getting shadows on the wall when I do this type of shot.
You're doing it wrong.
That's what we're getting at. It sounds like you don't have trouble getting shadows on the wall.
Yeah, that's true. He has no trouble with that.
Yeah. Man, is that easy. One flash on camera, studio lights on the side. Do you light up the background? Place a flash back there on remote. That's what he wants to know. And I said, well, I answered him. I said, don't know why there's a flash on the camera.
Right.
But this was Adam's photo, so perhaps you'll expound on how we did that in a minute.
Okay.
Hold that thought.
Sure.
The question is, and this is more general, is how does one avoid a background shadow? Not just in this setup, but in general.
Move your subjects away from the wall.
There's a lot of different aspects to that, but that is one of them. Okay, first of all, remember, there's shadows in life, babe.
Mm-hmm.
You know who said that? Jack Horner in Boogie Nights. Look it up.
Okay.
Generally, we don't really want shadows in our portraits, unless we do, and then we include them on purpose. But how do we get rid of them? So there's a number of ways to minimize or completely get rid of shadows. You already mentioned one. What was that?
Bring your subject further away from the wall or from wherever you're casting the shadow.
That's right. Whatever your background is, increase the distance between your subject and the background.
Right.
There's a famous photographer who does the opposite. He shoots a lot of portraits. Terry Richardson, I think his name is. Shoots a lot of stuff. It looks like he's shooting with his pop-up flash. But shoots a lot of very famous people, so he must be doing something right. But he keeps them right next to the white background, so the shadow is a big part of his style.
Right.
But in general, try to pull them away from the background. That's number one. Like, I had it as number three, but Adam skipped ahead, so that's fine.
Sure.
What else? I mean, because like you shoot in close quarters sometimes.
Yeah. So.
So what else can we do to minimize or eliminate shadows?
Well, you can use, depending on what your lighting source is, but you can, if you have a grid.
Let's assume we're controlling it. Now, what he said was this was basically in a dark environment, so all the light is what he brought to the image.
Right.
No ambient.
So feathering it in front of your subject.
Before we even get there, because that's a little bit of the advanced stuff.
But using. The way I look at it is I usually, if I want to control the light as much as I can, so I know where the shadows are going to fall. So I usually either use a grid, that helps.
Okay, before we get there, you take your flash out of the box.
Yeah.
What is soft light? What is hard light?
Soft light is usually diffused, closer to your subject and diffused.
That's what we want to do. So soft light is going to reduce shadows just in general.
Right.
Which is why, you know, on a cloudy day, you don't see your shadow. That's the situation of soft light being your friend. On a bright, sunny day, you're going to see your shadow.
Right.
That's hard light. So first off, we're going to make our light soft. Doesn't eliminate them altogether in this case, in our lighting case, but, I mean, you can still get a shadow from a soft light, but the edges of that shadow will be softer.
Right.
And the shadow itself will not be nearly as dark as if it was coming from hard light.
True.
Okay? So now we got this, the soft light. Now what?
Well,
put it right on the camera. That's the one part I didn't understand, why there was a flash on the camera.
Right.
Do you ever do this?
Not generally, unless... Like, if I'm doing a lighting situation where I'm going to set up lights, then no, I don't. I don't ever.
No.
But if I was... I mean, I could still control the shadows if I was shooting with just one, you know, on-camera flash, and that would just have to do with the black foamy thing and the directional light, so I could control...
Well, now you're talking about bouncing, and you're making it soft again, though.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, yes. Yeah. So definitely not direct hard light, because you're absolutely going to get a shadow.
So in this case, we're talking about getting your camera, your flash off the camera.
Okay.
Okay? So that's what we're going to do. So step one is move the light off axis. Now, the axis being where the lens is pointing. You don't want... There's a reason that the on-camera, the little pop-up flash is terrible, and it's because it's right on axis with your camera.
Right.
So we want to get this away, okay? On axis is going to throw whatever shadow you have right directly onto your background, and nothing you can do about that. Okay, get it off to one side or the other. Whichever side will be up to you. However far on the 90 or even in behind, whatever you want, that shall be up to you. But you're going to watch your shadow minimize.
Right.
Okay. Now, not just moving it to the right and to the left. What happens if you move your light higher?
Which is what I did in the photo of my of the kids. Is if you
which
move
you almost
it,
always do.
Yeah, if you move it higher and then angle it down, the angle of where the shadow is going to be cast is going to be much lower in terms of on your background.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can even play with angles, right? So if you throw the if you get the light up high, angle it down, the shadow that you would, you know, foreseeably have on your background will be lower. You could then get more eye level to your subject, and even though there might be a shadow in behind them, when you change the angle of your camera, then usually you can eliminate where that shadow is entirely.
Correct. Just by framing it out.
Yeah, just exactly by framing it out.
It still exists, but you're not shooting the floor.
That's right.
And that's where it's going to follow. So you think about, hey, where's going to... If you want to experiment with this, I would say turn the lights down low. Get a flashlight and just walk around and watch. That's going to be a hard light source, but watch where the shadow falls.
And if you're using a studio strobe, then there's the modeling light function, which when I use the big softbox with the Alien B light, that's what I do. I flip that on, and then you can tell exactly where your shadow's going to be.
There you go. Okay, so now we have it off axis one way. We have it off axis the other way by raising it up. It's very rare, unless you're shooting Trump for some reason, to put the cat to go off axis low. For some reason, I see so many images of him, like so many press photos. Not press, but like press release photos. He seems to be lit from underneath for whatever reason.
Makes him more scary.
I don't know. I don't want to get into the politics of it. Just something I noticed. Like, it is really... not flattering, but it's not even like they're images that his team controls, which is confusing to me. However, we don't generally do that. Generally, you want to have the light coming up, light being above coming down. It's pretty much how we always shoot. That's how I shot the magazine cover this week. You know, that's just how we do it.
Right.
So now we got that set up. We got our subject pulled back from the background. So now we control where the shadow falls. Here's the big one. Here's the million-dollar tip.
Okay.
That you already said.
Feathering?
Feather your hair like Farrah Fawcett in the 80s, 70s. Feathering. Feathering is the big move. This is what's gonna separate you from your competitors.
Heather Locklear, too.
Yeah, any of the heathers.
Yeah.
So, what does it mean? What do you mean by feather?
Aim it in front of your subject.
That's not what you mean by feather.
Well, I mean so that the light's not directly at your subject. You can theoretically feather it behind them as well, but you want the light to kind of fall in front. You're sort of the path of the light to be more in front of your subject versus directly right at your subject.
Okay, so you've heard people wax on about their lenses, I'm sure. Some people talk about how the sharpest part of the lens is in the middle.
Sure.
And then as you get towards the outside, it falls off. It gets soft. The same is true with your soft light. Even though you put an umbrella or a softbox on it, in the center, it will be softer than your bare flash, of course. However, in the center is going to be the hardest of that light. And around the edge, as it shoots off to the side and spills off, it gets very, very, very soft. And that's the edge. We call that edge, but using that edge, that's where you use the feather. So that's the part we want to use. So what we're going to do is what Adam was saying, is turn our flash one way or the other. We're not going to point it directly at our subject. We're going to point it out in front of them or in behind them. And then use either one of those edges, those feathered edges of that light. And that's where you get the best use of a soft light. Now, 99 times out of 99, Adam and myself are going to turn it in front of their subject. That way we don't have any spill going on to the background. We've limited that. All of our spill is going in front where we're not going to see it. And hopefully it's not going to hit the camera lens and cause flare, but generally it's just going to be thrown in front and never seen again.
Right.
Aren't you wasting light?
Yes.
Yeah. Who cares?
Yeah, you can recharge your batteries.
Absolutely, and in this situation where we have decent ISOs, like even with feathering, there's no reason you can't shoot at a ISO 320, which is going to be more than enough. So you're shooting in a dark environment. So you can go at an ISO 320 at an f/5.6. You're still going to be probably at 1/4 power,
right?
At the most, and you're still going to have plenty. If you're using the feather and you're throwing a whole bunch out away in front of your subject. Now, the good news is that will keep almost all of the shadow off the background.
And then if you take it one step further and use a softbox and add a grid to it, now that feathered light becomes even more directional, because feathering the light can be done with an umbrella as well as a softbox or any other light modifier. But with the umbrella, even though you're for the all intents and purposes, you are feathering it in front of your subject, that light is still going to be more difficult to control as far as your background goes in a small environment. So in a big area, not a problem, but in a small room like I shot that photo, much more difficult to control. So the key thing for shooting in small spaces would be having a grid or a softbox where you can even make sure that light is all feathered in front of your subject.
I love my softbox.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
I love my umbrella too, though, for certain situations. Yep. I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, but there are those situations exactly when you want to use that edge that the softbox comes in really handy. And that's quite often for this kind of lighting. But then, so on again, going back to the magazine cover, that was the softbox feathered in, but the fill light was just an umbrella, basically flashed directly in his face. But it's such a low power,
yeah,
that it's not gonna do much. All it's doing is adding a little flick into those shadows. It's not going to do the bulk of the lighting, so we're not going to notice it. Now, last way to get rid of your shadows, and this isn't I never do this specifically to rid myself of shadows. I do it for effect. But you can light your background if you want.
Right.
What would you do in that situation, especially in close quarters? How would you go about lighting your background?
Usually a flash, like you did with your subject, right in behind them so that they're going to block the flash, and then probably hard light, maybe snoot it so I can control exactly how big. Like, I wanted a kind of gradient for the background, which I did a little trickery in post to create the gradient, but I could have
done the same thing by basically putting a flash on a stand right behind the subjects, snooting it, and then firing it in on low power right into the background, and I would have got a similar effect in camera.
Mm-hmm. That's one more light to add. So generally when it comes to lighting the background, I very rare that I would do more than one light. Like it's almost always like the light in behind or possibly up, you know, camera left, camera right, out of frame, kind of raking it across to create that slash of light look.
Mm-hmm.
That I do sometimes. In that situation, I wouldn't do it to eliminate the background, the shadow in the background. There are times when I light the background with two flashes, and that's when I'm using a white background,
mm-hmm.
which I cross-light those when I'm using the seamless white. And then there's never any shadows anyways.
Right.
But even if I wasn't letting it, just using it as a gray, there still wouldn't be shadows because I take the time to light it in such a way that there would not be shadows anyways. So there you go. So in that case, yeah, if you're lighting your background to get rid of your shadows, I would suggest backing up and figuring out where your shadows are going to go. Now, certain situations you might be tough. You just can't get rid of the shadows, then go ahead and fire light into it and see if that helps. But I would use that as a last resort.
Okay.
That's it. No shadows. Monthly photo challenge for April. It is window light. Now, that's not next week. It's still one more episode after this.
Okay.
So post those on the Instagram. Hashtag it #2hosers. 2hosers monthly challenge. We'll put a link to that on our site. But a photo challenge for next week. It's no shadow. I don't want to spoil it for you, but it's going to be a no shadow.
No shadow.
So basically do what we talked about today. Okay. Or get creative if you like. Go out in the, you know, a cloudy day if you like. If you want to phone it in. But I'm going to go in the studio and I'm going to challenge myself to a very tough situation. And still, like I'm, you know, saying close quarters, I'm going to put myself in a close quarter situation just to purposely eliminate that shadow.
Okay. Well, that's my only option in the house.
Correct. There okay. You go. So that's it. No shadow for next week. All right, Adam, where can people find your stuff?
AdamSchwartz.ca and the 2hosers on Instagram. And I think I am Adam2hosers on Instagram as well.
I'm sure people can find you.
Yeah, just look for stuff.
Look for some hosers.
Yeah, look for hosers on Instagram. Right.
And you can find my stuff at alanatridge.com or the two of us at 2hosers.com, where you can find the links, photos, Amazon stuff, everything that we just talked about. And that's it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.